rest of us need your help. I want you to help the world be the best that it can be, and it can't be that without you. Each one of you is a gift. Don't dare forget about that.
Hello, and welcome to Letters from the Lunchroom, a podcast by Communities and Schools of Mid-America. I'm your host, Victoria Partridge. Communities and Schools is a nationwide nonprofit which connects students and their families to local resources in order to remove barriers so that they will have greater success in school and in life. During this podcast, we talk to people who have a relationship with our organization. From students to staff members and alumni to volunteers, we know that people who connect with nonprofits have a story to tell, and we want to know that story. If you follow us on social media, you have probably heard of today's guest. He was recently awarded an All In for Kids Award for his advocacy of the Communities and Schools programs in Southeast Kansas. In fact, when we posted a video of his work in the Chanute School District on our Facebook page, it received over 12,000 views. I'm really looking forward to learn what it was that led this superintendent to become such a strong supporter of our program. Stay tuned as we welcome Richard Prophet to the lunchroom. Hi, and welcome to the lunchroom. First thing I want to do is, do you prefer that I call you Richard or Mr. Prophet or Superintendent?
No, just call me Rich.
Rich. Oh, perfect. That wasn't even one of the options I was thinking of. So how are you doing today, Rich?
Oh, I'm fantastic. How are you?
I'm doing really well. I'm really interested in how this is going to go because this is the third episode that we've recorded of this podcast. And the first two guests were people that I've met in real life, but you and I have never met in real life.
Right.
As far as I know. But you know my colleague, LaShawn Taylor,
yes,
very well. Yes. And so I'm really, really excited because, of course, I've heard a lot of things about you. But hopefully I'll learn some new things today.
Yeah.
So have you ever been on a podcast before?
No, I haven't. This is my first time.
Oh, how exciting. Do you listen to podcasts?
Yes, I do. Every chance that I get when I travel, going to meetings here in the state of Kansas, I try to listen to as many podcasts as I can.
Oh, that's exciting. What are some of your favorite ones?
Well, a lot of them circle around a lot of leadership type of situations, standards-based grading, a lot of things that I pick up on Twitter. So it's just an assortment of things that have to do with education.
Oh, I love that. Well, I hope that you will add Letters from the Lunchroom to your list.
Absolutely.
Especially your episode. So I'm very, very excited.
Okay.
So one of the things that we do here in this podcast is, like I said in the intro, we talk to people who have a connection with our organization to kind of get to know what it was on the path that they took in life that ended up connecting them to Communities and Schools. And so thinking about that, I know that you have always wanted to be a superintendent or that you've always been a superintendent, but did you always want to be a superintendent?
Well, that was quite a journey. I started off as a teacher and a coach, and I thought that I wanted to be in the classroom for my entire career and be a coach. I was a head coach of high school football teams, girls basketball teams, and then track and field teams at the high school level. And that brought that competitive nature that I fed upon when I was a younger professional. And as I started to progress through my my time as a teacher, I became more involved in the administrative side of it and really began to have an interest in building level administration. And when I got there, I thought that was kind of the end all, that I was still going to be in a building and I was going to be able to be connected with kids on a daily basis. But the more that I saw about district level administration and the decisions that are made at that level and how they can have a positive impact on all the students that are in your school system, and even greater than that, on your community, I began to have a lot more interest in that area. And so after a while of being a building level administrator, I decided that I wanted to take on a district level role and became a superintendent. And I am now in my third superintendency here in the state of Kansas.
So I know that you are currently in Pittsburgh, right?
That's correct.
And you were previously in Chanute, because that's the position that you were in when you were awarded the All In for Kids Award, correct?
Right. That both of these communities and school districts have communities and schools as a part of the things that we do to help out our students.
I love that. We're going to talk more about that in a second. What was your other superintendent position?
I was a superintendent at a smaller district in central Kansas, outside of Salina, Kansas, a school district called Southeast of Saline.
Okay.
I was there for 4 years, moved on to Chanute, where I was there for 3 years, and now I'm in my first year in Pittsburgh.
Excellent. And so you said you started out as a teacher. Whenever you were growing up as a kid, did you always want to be a teacher?
No. Actually, I grew up on a farm in central Kansas outside of a very small town by the name of Alden. Had about maybe 200 people that lived in it. And so I was from rural America. And what I knew was farming and small town life. And then when I went to Kansas State University and was trying to figure out what I was going to do with the rest of my life and dabbled in a couple of different majors, I finally landed on education, because I really wanted to dedicate the rest of my life to being able to help young people to grow and develop them. And I really feed off of that. It really gives me a charge to know that I'm making a difference in their lives.
I can kind of see how this picture is getting painted then for how you got connected to, well, maybe not how you got connected to communities and schools, because we're not there yet, but why you have become such a strong supporter of our program.
Yes.
So, Richard, you said you grew up on a farm in a very, very small town. What was school like for you in that small community?
Well, school in a small community means that you're able to be in a whole lot of activities. You know everybody that is in your class, in your school, and in your community. And so you are in band, you're in choir, you're in all the activities, whether it's a club or athletic event. You are a part of a lot of the things that go on in the community, and everybody just pitches in to make sure that that community thrives. And so it acts almost as one big family. So I had a very well-rounded education. I was supported by a lot of fantastic and great teachers, and lived in a community that was just made up of some of the best people that you will ever meet.
Excellent. Continuing in that same sort of mindset for growing up and going to school in a small community, when you think back to what it was like being a student in middle school, high school, even elementary school, do you remember having kids that you went to school with that, because I assume there was no communities and schools in that school. As far as I know, we've never been in that community.
No.
But can you think of students who maybe would have benefited from having a site coordinator in their lives?
Yeah, there absolutely were. And when I went to school, school was very different. Take, for instance, special ed. Special ed students were not in the building so much when I was in elementary school. They were shipped to another school in another town. And it wasn't until some of the laws changed that brought some special ed students back in. So my experiences saw a transformation of the needs being met within the school building, even as a student, but even more so as a professional, that I did not experience when I was a child.
Wow. So as we're starting to kind of really get a view for the person that you are and what it was in your life that kind of started implanting these characteristics that led you to become this really strong advocate of communities and schools, when did that official relationship with our program and yourself begin?
Well, when I became the superintendent at Chanute is when I had my first exposure to communities and schools. And I really didn't know much about the program. but I tried to learn about as much as I could in a short amount of time. And the one thing that really excited me about communities and schools was that it was an organization that was helping the school fulfill the needs of students where we were not able to take care of those on our own. Either we didn't have the staff, we didn't have the time, we didn't have the resources or the training to be able to take care of some of the things that communities and schools does. And throughout my career, I've always had a soft spot in my heart for those students who have the greatest needs. I did not grow up that way. All of my needs were met. I really grew up in the all-American upbringing, where my parents were married, the whole time, and my grandparents were close, and everybody helped everybody else. And so I didn't really understand what poverty was. I didn't understand what needs were, even though I saw it a little bit with some of my classmates and those that I went to school with, that they had some needs, but it was always at arm's length because we didn't really know much about it. And their needs were met the best that they possibly could be by the schools and the teachers that I attended. But I didn't really understand it until I became an educator. And then I understood the stories. Then I saw the needs. I saw it, how it affected kids. And my parents, my grandparents, my entire family are just wonderful people. And one of the things that was ingrained in me at an early age was that you help others that are less fortunate. And so as I went to Chanute and I found communities and schools that was a real organization that solved real problems, that secured real resources to help these kids, I was all in. There was no second guessing it. They were a part of everything that we did in our schools. We didn't see them as a separate entity. They were a part of who we were, and there was just no separation. And I will tell you that we could not and cannot do the job that we need to do to meet the needs of our students without our communities and schools workers that we have.
Oh, wow. That's really amazing to hear, because I do talk to some superintendents in one of my roles that I play here with communities and schools outside of the, podcast. I'm also an area director. And so it's always great to hear that kind of feedback and to hear that we are truly making a difference in the lives of their students and within their community. But then I also love the piece about being part of that school family, because I think that's really important.
Right.
So while you're on that thought, what are some of your greatest accomplishments regarding the communities and schools programs?
Well, one of the things that I want everybody to really know is that communities and schools is set up that if you have the right person in a director's place, that as a administrator, what I need to do is remove obstacles and try to get them the resources that they need to do their job. Otherwise, they just take care of it. And we had the right people in place in Chanute. We had some wonderful ladies who worked in our elementary school that they were some of the first faces that you saw when you came into the building on a parent night. They were some of the first people that you saw at some of the community events when you were helping out. They were somebody that the teachers could rely on to go to for resources. They worked hand in hand with the administrators, the counselors to take care of everything. And it was just a wonderful relationship. But to get that job done, there were certain things that I had to remove from out of their way so that they could do their job, make sure that we opened doors where they seemed to be shut, try to secure resources that we keep the program going. And so my role wasn't as active as what maybe I would like for it to have been. But once again, we had the people in place that could do the job. I just needed to support it, do my job as a superintendent, and make sure that they were able to do their job.
Well, I think that's excellent advice to any other administrators out there that are either currently in a school or in a district that has the Communities and Schools program, or that are considering bringing the Communities and Schools program into their school or into their community, because that is absolutely true. You know, we cannot do our job without the support, and being able to have some administrators that are able to help remove those remove the barriers for us, so that then we can go on and remove the barriers for the students, is really helpful. And so I wanted to take a moment and kind of talk a little bit about the All In for Kids Award, because what you were just talking about is the pretty much the exact reason that you were the recipient of this award. So for those of you who are listening who have not heard of this award, this is a national award. It is given out annually and is only given out to 3 recipients. So Communities and Schools, the national office, receives nominations, and those are persons who have relationships with the organization. And this year, Rich received the award for being a champion of the CIS program in Southeast Kansas, specifically in Chanute. According to the press release, quote, in partnership with CIS, Mr. Prophet brought a community health center, mental health programming, and college prep assistance to Chanute Public Schools, unquote. That is a lot. You did a lot. You did so much. And it's really impressive, you know, for me talking to you as somebody who works for Communities and Schools of Mid-America, as somebody who is an area director, but also gets to do this other piece where I get to talk to people and do the communications and marketing and learn people's stories. I'm just kind of blown away. I can see why you were chosen to receive this award. So number one, congratulations on the award.
Thank you.
You're welcome. It's really too bad that we couldn't do the big, you know, shebang in South Carolina. But, you know, I hope that you still feel honored. And
well, I absolutely do. And I'm very humbled. And you'll have to forgive me if I get a little bit emotional here, because all of those things that you went through that we accomplished, and I want to make sure that everybody understands that it is we accomplished it, not myself alone. And we brought in is because we were taking care of kids' needs. And that's what it's all about. We've got so many kids that come to us that have needs that nobody can even fathom. And it limits them in what they can do in school, but even more than that, it limits them in what they can do in their life. And if we're not going to do it, then who will? And so we have to step up. And so what we do from the outside may seem like an incredible thing, but actually it's very simple. We're just trying to find those things that are going to make a difference in our kids' lives, to make the quality of life better, that's going to open doors of opportunity, and that are just going to make them happier and healthier. And if we can find those things, I believe it's our obligation to find them. Because if not, I'm not really sure why we're in the business of education. And so it's kids first only, and kids first every time.
And these things that you are quoted for in partnership, you know, is what it says. We're working with communities and schools and together, like you said, we. But these are real life-changing achievements and additions to the community. A health center, mental health programming, college prep assistance, those are those things that really change kids' lives. Yes. And I'm really, really touched about the mental health programming, because I think that that is something that isn't necessarily overlooked, but is a resource that still has a long way to grow to really meet the needs of people, but especially kids. I mean, being a kid is hard, and being a kid in poverty is really, really hard.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that I think anybody in education across the nation would tell you is that we're seeing an increased amount of mental health needs. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of kids that are coming to us with needs that are more severe and some needs that we have never seen before. It seems like every year we see something new, and it really needs to be dealt with a lot of professionals, because teachers and a lot of school staff are not trained to be able to take care of those things for these students. And so it's an incumbent upon us to make sure that we find those resources. It's not just so they can learn. I know that maybe our primary reason for being an education institution is that so kids can learn. And we think of that in some sort of content area knowledge position. But the fact of the matter is that learning goes well beyond that. Being healthy, being in the right frame of mind so that you can learn and you can advance yourself in whatever it is that you set your mind to is such critical importance to everybody. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't just hit those kids that a lot of people would think are low income. We've got plenty of kids that come from pretty well-adjusted homes where parents are nowhere near the poverty level that still need some mental health assistance. And so it really spans the spectrum of students so that they can really achieve at the highest levels that they have within them.
Mm-hmm. That's actually one of the things that I like most about communities and schools is that we do not have specific qualifiers for students to become part of our program. It doesn't have to be kids that are specifically low income or kids that are specifically, you know, in this target of, you know, missing school or grade point average. It's any kid with any need, because just like you were saying, they look different. You know, you may have a kid from a family that is a traditional looking family. They don't have any problems with income. The kid is coming to school on time and they're doing well in classes. But then they connect with the communities and schools site coordinator, and it turns out that that kiddo is maybe dealing with anxiety or is getting bullied at school about something or has self-confidence issues. You know, there's so many things that kids can use that extra support person for.
Yeah, you never know what kind of need a student is coming to school with. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of people that on the outside in a community may look at it from their point of view and say, well, this is a very well-adjusted young person, or it's a well-adjusted family. They have everything together. But when you start peeling back the layers, they need as much assistance as anybody else. And so we want to make sure that we're meeting their needs just as much as we would those that are usually need some assistance, which traditionally goes along with low-income families, but that's not always the case.
Right. And, you know, by meeting those needs, then we're actually helping those kids get a better education, because you're removing the distractions and barriers that may otherwise be on their minds when they're supposed to be learning.
Right.
So I think it's great that you brought all that stuff into Chanute. I know that you recently moved over to Pittsburgh. So has your relationship changed with communities and schools at all during that transition?
No, it hasn't changed in my relationship. It's just a new set of faces. LaShawn, who you mentioned before that I've had a relationship with when I was in Chanute, he is over here and works with the communities and schools, and his office is nearby. So really what I've done is just traded new people for the ones that I was able to work with when I was in Chanute. They're still the right people. They still do great things for kids. They're helping us form relationships with parents where maybe the school wasn't able to form those relationships and tap into community resources to help those students out. So it really has been a smooth transition.
Excellent. And one of the cool things about Pittsburgh is that it is our only community in the Communities and Schools of Mid-America network, so our five-state network. But Pittsburgh, Kansas is the only community in which we are fully saturated. So every single school in Pittsburgh has a Communities and Schools program, correct?
Yes, and I was very excited about that, because when I was in Chanute, we had Communities and Schools with a couple of workers in our elementary. We also had one in the high school, but we didn't have one in the middle school. And our middle school administrators and teachers had seen the difference that Communities and Schools workers had made in those other buildings, and they were actually begging for Communities and Schools to get into the middle school. And that's one of the things that LaShawn and I had worked together on to try to move towards, to get a CIS program started in the middle school. It just so happened that I moved on before that could come to fruition. But it very much excited me when I got to Pittsburgh, knowing that Communities and Schools was in each one of our buildings and that we were going to be able to make a difference in every area and meet the needs of every level of child in our district.
Yeah, it's really exciting because not only do you have that massive impact across the community, but then you also know that, you know, you have students that are receiving that additional support from the start of K to the end of 12. And I think that's just excellent.
Yeah, you know, having a Communities and Schools worker in the middle school, I think, makes a tremendous difference because middle school is where I've said for many years that you kind of turn your brain off and your hormones on. And it's a time of discovery of who your friends are, of who you are. It's a confusing time. Your body is going through changes. You're starting to see the world a little bit differently. You're gaining newer friends and maybe releasing old ones. And so it's just a tough time for kids. And there's just a lot of pressures that social media, TV, radio, different things put on our kids. They're bombarded with a lot of images and ideas. Along with, you know, mental health as well for some of them. So having a Communities and Schools worker there to help them weed through those things, to help families and to get them in the right frame of mind is just an incredible part of what's going on in our schools.
Yeah, I could not agree more because I have a 12-year-old. And so I've got this seventh grader and it is just absolutely stunning to see all of the changes on a personal level that these kiddos go through. And I think, you know, middle school, just like you were saying, is the essential time. If you had to pick one area to put a Communities and Schools person, put them in that middle school, because those kids, that is a key point in their life. Just like you were saying, they're going through so many different changes and so much discovery. And honestly, I just feel like middle school, you cannot get enough support.
Not at all. They are probably some of our most needy kids when you put all factors together.
Mm-hmm. So taking a look back at your life, tell me one of your proudest moments.
Oh, gosh. One of my proudest moments. You know, when I was a coach early on in my career, I was in a very small town. And I had a young man who lived across the street from the school. For a single mom, had a younger brother. Dad was not in the picture. And they really didn't have much. I know a lot of times he would discuss about some of the utilities had been shut off. And the only meal that he was eating for the day was the lunch at school. But he was just an absolutely great kid, and he came in early one morning when I was in the coach's office, and he said, "Coach, I'm embarrassed because we don't have running water right now. We don't have electricity. I can't wash my clothes, and I'm just kind of embarrassed to go to school because I'm afraid other students are going to tell me that I stink or my clothes are dirty." And I said, "Well, I tell you what, you meet me here at 6:30 every morning, and we'll make sure that you can jump in the shower. And when I need to wash your clothes, I'm going to do that." And it really started a relationship with that young man. And because he was from a single parent family, he had a lot of free time. He got into a little bit of trouble, but I really held him accountable, and he turned into a tremendous young man. And even though education was not an important part of his family, he wanted to do something beyond high school. He just didn't know what. And he went into the Navy. He ended up in San Diego, California. And I moved on to some other teaching and coaching and even administrative opportunities. And I lost touch with him. And a few years later, he called me and wanted me to know that I had made a difference in his life, and he wanted me to know that he and his wife were expecting their first child, a boy, and they were going to name him after me. And that is what it's all about. Just doing something so incredibly simple and caring about another human being that made a difference in that young man's life. And in turn, he is going to do the same for some other people. And so you never know what kind of difference you're going to make. But that is probably one of my proudest moments that I've ever had.
Oh my gosh. I have to like compose myself over here. I'm just like sitting in my studio crying. That was amazing. Oh my gosh. Thank you so much for sharing that. I can see why that's your proudest moment. Yeah. That's wow. Okay. Wow. Okay. So on that, we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back with a second serving of Letters from the Lunchroom. So stay tuned. Welcome back. As part of our show, we ask each guest to write a letter to the students that Communities and Schools serves. The only guideline that they are given is that it must come from the heart. We also warn them that they will be asked to read their letter aloud during the podcast. Rich, are you ready to read your letter?
I am.
Go for it.
I'm not going to pretend that I know what it's like to be a student in the world today. I see all the pressures and difficulties that you go through. You're bombarded by information, images, ideas that pull at your thoughts and your attentions away from where they really need to be. In the sheer mass of everything that comes at you, I don't know how you can process it all. But if there is one thing that I've learned in my 29 years of being an educator, it's that students are a lot more resilient than what most people give them credit for. Every time I've ever set a standard for my students, raising the bar higher than where most people think they could go, they always rose to the occasion and met it. Some students were able to achieve great things just because they had the intelligence and talents to do it. Others required a little bit of help, and others had to be reminded that they could do it. Those that had to be reminded that they could do it were always the most difficult group to help meet all of those lofty goals. Because of their past situations and the things that they had been told about themselves, they started to believe that they were something that they were actually not. They chose to listen to the voices that limited them in their abilities and importance. So they believed the lies. So I always had to change the conversation for them so that they knew the real truth. And I want to change the conversation for you. No matter if you're a high achiever, one that has to work at it diligently, or a person who has to battle against outside forces just to get by, I want you to know three things. First, you matter. You're not just another person. You are you, and that's a good thing. You've been given gifts and talents different than people around you, but you are uniquely you. You have something to offer everyone. This world sometimes is harsh and tells us that we need to be this or be that. You just need to be the best you that you can be. Your talents are needed. Your personality is needed. And you are very important. Anyone that tells you otherwise is feeding you a lie. Secondly, you can. Don't let others put limitations on you. You can do it. Because of your different talents and abilities, you may have to ask some people for help or even work hard to achieve. But make no mistake, you can do it. There are more people who believe in you and support you than those that don't. Believe me, I work with them every day. Only listen to those that help you get to where you want to be, because you can and you will. Thirdly, you're wanted and needed. There are things that I'm not very good at, I rely on others to help me do those things or even help me get it done in a small amount of time. You are one of those people. You're talented where others lack talent. You're strong where others are weak. You have a specific purpose that the rest of us need. The rest of us need your help. I want you to help the world be the best that it can be, and it can't be that without you. Each one of you is a gift. Don't dare forget about that. You make the world a better place to be. Surround your place with other people who believe in you. I believe in you. You make a difference for everyone, and you are loved.
Thank you. I always just get so blown away whenever I hear these letters. So whenever you read that letter aloud, I hear a lot of passion. And obviously, you care so much about the students that that you work with. But whenever you read that letter, you know, I hear one thing, but what is it that you feel?
Well, there's one thing that, and you have to excuse me, I'm getting a little emotional. There's one thing that I know for sure. I wasn't placed on this earth to take care of me. I was placed on this earth to make a difference in other people's lives. And that's what it's all about. I can't listen to accolades that I get, as well as I can't listen to all those voices that try to detract away from what we're doing and people telling us that we can't. My focus has to be on helping those people achieve. And it is my duty and it's my obligation to do what I can, my resources, my time, my emotion, everything that I have to help these young people to learn and become well-adjusted adults. And so it's very simple to me. It's not about me. It's about everybody else. And so I want them to know that they do matter, that they can, that they are wanted and they are needed, that everybody has a place in this world, and that they're unique, and they need to be able to flourish and let everybody see who they are.
Well, I can say that you should be able to go to sleep at night knowing that you are indeed making that difference that you want to make, and the ripple effect from the actions that you are taking is huge. And I really hope with this podcast that the people who listen to it are not just people who are interested in, you know, communities and schools or people that are interested in nonprofits, but I hope that it's also people that work with us, their teachers that are in the schools that we serve, that they are families and students. And I hope that they hear the words you say and that they listen to them and that they take them to heart and that they are reminded that they do matter, that they can do what they want to do in life and that they are wanted and needed.
Yeah, I hope so. That's important for everybody.
It is. So I want to ask, did you find it difficult to write the letter?
No, it was very easy. That's what we do here, and that's what we're trying to infuse. I know that I'm just coming in on a ground level here in Pittsburgh, but the first thing that I talked to all our staff about in individual meetings at all the buildings was that this is about students first. The first thing that we're going to do is we're going to care about students. We didn't get into this business to make money or make a difference for ourselves. We did it to make a difference in students' lives. And so that was going to have to be at the center of everything that we did. And so everything that we do, all the decisions that we make, whether it's curriculum, whether it's financial, you know, whether it's, you know, securing new buildings, it's all about helping kids. And so that, as long as we keep that as the center of everything that we do, we will be successful.
Perfect. So one more question before we go to the last portion of the podcast. is what advice would you give to your younger self?
I think one of the things that I wrote in my letter was that you can. You know, I've got two brothers that I love to death, and I think the world of, and they are incredibly talented in some areas. And I never really saw myself as, you know, somebody that was incredibly talented that could do a lot of things. And so I had struggles as a young person really believing in myself and believing that I could. And it wasn't really till I was an adult and put myself into some leadership positions that I really discovered that there was more inside of me than what I ever even knew was there. And I realized that it's really always there. You just have to have the courage to tap into it. And sometimes you need some people that will help you see the real you, because sometimes they can see it before you do. And so if I was able to go back and talk some sense into a young man who was, you know, the stereotypical, you know, young child and teenager, I would say, you can do it. You have it inside you. You just have to let it out.
I love that. Well, I want to thank you for sharing your letter with us. We're going to take another quick break, and then we'll be back for some extra credit. Okay, so we are back. Rich, we are going to take things up and make them a little bit more lighthearted since we got super deep in that last little section. So are you ready for some extra credits questions?
Sure.
Okay, first question. On a scale of 1 to 10, how weird would you say that you are?
Oh, goodness. That's a loaded question.
No.
Gosh, I don't know. Probably a 5, because in a leadership position, I want to make sure that everybody knows that, you know, I don't get rattled. I'm on an even keel, and that I'm always trying to use, you know, a lot of common sense and logic to come to the conclusions that I need to come to on a daily basis. But at the same time, I also want to be very approachable. It doesn't matter whether I'm at a black tie event or I'm talking to a farmer at the local's farmer cooperative, or I'm just meeting a bunch of men at a restaurant. I want to be able to talk to each one of them. And there's nothing special about me. A lot of times people look at a superintendent and they think, well, you know, this guy's got it all together. And just because of my position that I'm somehow important. But the fact of the matter is that I just am a regular person with a lot of responsibility on my shoulders. And so I can be a little bit goofy. I like to think that I've got a pretty good sense of humor, and I love to have people feel comfortable around me. So sometimes when I joke with people, they find it a little bit odd, because here's a professional person who really has a sense of humor and is joking around with me. But I love being able to do that.
I love it. It sounds like you have a nice balance, like you said. I mean, you're number 5 on the weird scale, but you know to also keep it real and joke around with people. So do you tell jokes, or are you just goofy?
Oh, no. I'm goofy, and I tell jokes.
Okay.
I love to laugh.
So do you have a joke that you would share?
Well, I'll share with you my son's favorite joke from when he was about 5 years old. So where do you find a dog with no legs?
I don't know.
Right where you left him.
Of course.
Yes. And as a matter of fact, I thought about that joke yesterday because I couldn't find my keys to my pickup. And I thought, wonder where they're at. And I thought, well, they're right where I left it. I just can't remember where I left it.
Of course. So. Okay. So here's your final extra credit question. If you were to throw your own personal parade, what would be its theme, and what would you make sure that it included?
Well, to be quite honest, I wouldn't throw my own personal parade.
Not one. It doesn't have to be for you. It would just be one okay. that you threw. I guess that's the way I should word it. Yeah. If you were to throw like your own parade and you were just gonna be like, I, you know, Rich, today's a good day to throw a parade.
Yeah.
What would be its theme and what would you make sure that you had in it?
Well, I think it would be the Be Positive Parade.
Oh,
we have a lot of things going on across our nation and our world right now that are negative, and we just don't have enough positive. We've got people that are focusing on the negative. It just feeds upon itself, and negativity is just everywhere. And so I would want it to be positive parade, I guess. What would I have in it? Make sure to have in it.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. I don't know. I've seen so many parades.
Well, what are some symbols of positivity for you?
I know a lot of people don't like this, but I like clowns.
Oh, yeah.
I love that they make people, for the most part, as long as it's a happy clown, I guess. But
yeah.
they make people laugh. They make people smile. They make people feel good. And that's what most clowns are all about. So I guess clowns.
Love it. And maybe like some free chocolate and flowers.
Well, believe it or not. I don't like chocolate at all. And, it's very odd. A lot of people think that it's almost communist not to like chocolate.
And you only put yourself as a 5 on the weird scale, but you're sitting here holding on to the secret that you don't like chocolate.
Yes. It's a curse, I guess. But yeah, candy, because kids love having candy thrown to them in parades.
Well, and let's be real, even parents won't turn down free candy most of the time.
Oh, yeah. They stand there and have the kids scamper and go get it. But make no mistake about it, they're the keeper of the bag.
True. Okay. We are going to then go ahead and wrap up this episode of Letters from the Lunchroom. I would want to thank Rich again for joining us and for being our guest on today's episode. It was excellent talking to you and learning your story, and I'm so excited that we get to share this story with everybody. So thank you, Rich.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. And if anybody out there that's listening has any questions about communities and schools, please feel free to contact me, and I'd be more than happy to talk to you about my experiences.
And you can find Rich's contact information if you Google search Pittsburgh, Kansas public schools.
Yes, USD 250.
Perfect. And for more information on communities and schools of Mid-America, you can check out our website at cismidamerica.org. Make sure to subscribe to this podcast and follow us on social media at cismidamerica. I want to thank all of you for joining us on this episode of Letters from the Lunchroom, and I want to give a special shout out to Camille Abdel-Jawad, one of our AmeriCorps Vista members and audio engineer of this podcast. Without her talents and hard work, this podcast would not be possible. So thank you so much, Camille. I am your host, Victoria Partridge. And until next time, class is dismissed.